We now start the 11th and final chapter of Maseches Sanhedrin. As I mentioned before, in the Bavli, this is actually the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin. And be that as it may, if you're keeping track, we had listed that there were four different ways in which the Bezdin could execute and carry out a death penalty. The three of them we've expounded upon at length. The fourth one is the topic of our parak here. It's the topic of chenek, which is strangulation, which is basically happened by the two witnesses who accused and then ultimately led to conviction of this person, would actually pull like sort of like a sash from both directions around the person's neck, holding that until he expired. There are a total of 36 crimes in the Torah for which there is a potential death penalty. Six of them get chenek, and that's one of our, those are the topics of our chapter here. And worth noting, this is sort of like, chenek is sort of like the default misa, meaning every time that the verses don't specify how an execution should be carried out, and there's no sort of like exegetical connection to describe how it should happen, so then the default of just says like, most you must, he should die, etc., then the mode of execution is chenek. Okay, so here the Mishnah says, there are really three topics in our Mishnah here, Mishnah Aleph. First, we just list out the crimes that get chenek, then we'll discuss a couple of them, and the rest of the parak will discuss the remainder. So it says inside, Elu hen hanechanakin, the following persons are potentially liable to chenek if they have, again, Edim and Hasra, etc., all the boxes are ticked. So then, they are six in total. Number one, Hamake Aviv Ve'imo, one who strikes his father or mother, and again, we'll see that means details he has to draw blood, etc., but I'm not going to go into the details of any of these six now. We'll explicate them in full as we go through the parak here. Just translating right now. The second is Vagonev Nefesh Mi Yisrael, one who kidnaps a Jew. We'll see the details shortly, Bez Hashem. The third is Vizaken Mamre Alpi Bezdin, the rebellious elder who essentially rules contrary to the Sanhedrin after trying to clarify the matter with them. We'll see that also shortly, Bez Hashem. Unavi Hasheker, a false prophet. This is someone who prophesies in the name of Hashem, but does so falsely. Number five is Vahamisna Beh B'Shem Avodah Zarah, one who prophesies saying that the source of his prophetic experience and the message that he's delivering is from not Hashem, but some other deity. And finally, Vahaba Al Eishas Ish, a simple adulterer, someone, the generic version of someone is a married woman and someone else who's not her husband sleeps with her, so then the penalty potentially for both he and she is, both him and her, I should say, is chenek. Then finally says the Mishnah also, like a side point here, which is, Vezome bas kohen uvoala, also gets chenek, meaning, we'll save the details again to the last Mishnah of the parak, but the short of it is that a bas kohen we saw before, a married woman who's the son, daughter of a kohen, so her punishment is not the usual chenek, like we just said, but rather it's sreifa. His punishment, however, is chenek, in fact. Again, we'll discuss the base of that later on. The point here is that if you have Adam Zolman, who lied and said that they committed adultery when they didn't, so then even though the punishment to her would have been sreifa, whereas to him would have been chenek, so the punishment for Adam Zomim, if everything else, you know, all the conditions are met, would be chenek as well. But the Mishnah is not listing that as like one of the six, if you will. That's just, you know, Adam Zomim are punished kasher zamam lasos chiv. They are punished as they plan to do to their brother. So that's just whatever it is, it is. Okay, that's part one of the Mishnah. Part two of the Mishnah now talks about the first of the six of those crimes, which is Hamake Aviv V'imo, one who strikes his father or mother. Again, the word, the letter Vav, coordinating conjunction, could mean an or an and. In this case, it definitely means or. So strikes either his father or his mother. So the pasuk is pretty black and white about that. It says, Umake aviv v'imo most you must, shall die. So the Mishnah here says, Eno chayev ad sheyasa behen chabura. The penalty of Misa doesn't kick in unless the child who hit the parent creates a chabura. Now, the meaning of chabura throughout Kol Torah Kula, essentially, and Rashi is explicit about this in the Chumash, is to make a bruise, meaning like pooling of blood beneath the skin, from breaking blood vessels, and not necessarily bleeding outside of the body. There is a long discussion, really in the Achronim, if the chabura here would require bleeding on the outside, or if just pooling a bruise on the inside is sufficient. We'll say Bepashas it is, because it is everywhere else, so bruise is bruise, but there are those saying it needs to be bleeding proper, in order to be liable for the death penalty. Meaning if a child strikes a parent and creates a chabura, so then the penalty is potentially misa by chenek, and that's all. Whereas if the child would injure the parent and not create a chabura, so then the child would be over the generic love of striking a Jew, which you can't do, obviously, any Jew. And if there's any damage done, so those five payments, the tsar, nezek, sheves, ripui, and boshes are all, that's a strange order of said them, but anyways, those are all made from the child to the parents as appropriate. Okay, so now, reflects the Mishnah, besides the fact that hitting one's parents is less severe than cursing one's parents, in as much as we saw cursing the parents would be liable to the penalty of skila, much more severe stoning than chenek. There's another stringency as well that applies only to cursing one's parents, says the Mishnah. Zechomer b'mekalel m'bimakeh. This is the following is also a stricture that applies to cursing in contrast to just striking one's parents. Shemekalel la'achar misa chayev. If one curses his parents after they're dead, he's still liable potentially for skila, whereas v'amake la'achar misa patar. If one strikes his parent after they're dead, so then he would not be liable for anything other than terribly doing something terrible, but he wouldn't be liable for misa. This is based also on a pasuk, because the pasuk says, in the cursing pasuk, it says, ki ish asher yikalel es aviv ve'es imo mos yumas, and then it repeats itself saying, aviv ve'imo kilel, he cursed his mother and father, mentioning it for a second time. So the repetition tells you that even if it's done after the death of the parent. Okay, that's part number one. Now, part number two, really, the Mishnah. Part number three of the Mishnah, which also appears as a third Mishnah in the Bavli, talks about the second of the six crimes, which is kidnapping. So it says, Hagonev nefesh miYisrael, if one kidnaps a Jew, Enochayev adche yachnisenu l'rishuso, he, the kidnapper, will not be liable potentially to the death penalty unless he brings the kidnapped person into his rishus, into his property or domain. Meaning, the simple reading would be that unlike other kinds of theft, where if one, like say, like you're stealing a cow and you take the cow and you drag it and you lead it in a simta, like an alleyway, that would be a mode of acquisition and that would make the cow now stolen or acquired. Whereas that's not the simta, the private alleyway is not private property. So according to simple reading, if one kidnaps a person and he has to do some kind of mode of acquisition, like also a Kenyan type activity, but doing that in a simta wouldn't be good enough. It has to be in his private property, like in his own home or backyard or something. And there are those who disagree and say it's like everything else, but the Rambam seems to understand that it is only on one's personal private property. So now, there are actually two psukim in the Chumash, unrelated, like separate psukim, one in Shmos and one in Devarim, that talk about kidnapping. The one in Devarim, the second one is mentioned explicitly in our Mishnah, or a part of it is. It says, Ki matze ish gonev nefesh. If you, yi matze, you discover, you find, that's going to be the source of a drasha here, a person who stole a fellow, a Jew, a human, we'll see here. The Mishnah, the pasuk says, V'his amer bo umachoro. And he, his amer, he like works him, like exploits him for some service, and also umachoro, and sells him. So when the dust settles, you're going to see that there actually are four conditions that need to be met to be liable to this death penalty, l'ilah halacha. First, it has to be a Jew. Second, it has to be that he's taken possession of, like in his private domain. Third of all, it has to be that there's some sort of exploitation, some usage of the kidnapped party. And finally, the party has to be sold on to another party. And only then would there be a death penalty. Those four conditions need to be met. But here we're going to see sort of discussions on that. Here in the Mishnah, first and foremost, when we say v'hisamer bo umacharo, he has to be worked, the kidnapped person has to be worked and then sold on. The Pashat reading is both of those things have to happen, so that vav umacharo means and sold, and that's how the halacha is, although worth noting that the Gaonim, like Sadi Gaon or Rabbi Gaon, learn it's like an or, meaning either worked, exploited for some service, or sold would be meet the requirements for being liable to the death penalty. Okay, anyway, so back inside here, the Mishnah says, again, Hagun of Nefesh Yisrael, you steal a Jew, kidnap them, Eino Chayev Ad Shiyachnisenu L'Rishuso, there's no liability until you bring him into your possession. I should just speak out for a second, I'm sorry, parenthetically. The Seres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, we talk about the Isser of Geneva, is referring to kidnapping, not stealing stuff, for the record. In any case, the Mishnah here says, Reb Yehuda Omer Ad Shiyachnisenu L'Rishuso V'Yishtamish Bo. He says, Reb Yehuda says you have to not only take him into your private property, but also yishtamesh bo, you have to use him. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, v'hisamer bo u'machoro, you have to use him and then sell him. So the truth is that Tanna Kamma holds that the chachamim, like Reb Yehuda, they need to do some shimush, some usage of him. That's the pasuk says, hisamer. The difference is that the Tanna Kamma holds any exploitation and usage would be enough. Whereas Reb Yehuda says it has to be something, you know, at least meeting the de minimis, like, you know, sheva pruta level. Like, it has to be worth one pruta, which is like worth something. I don't know what, you know, 5 cents. But if you just, you know, I don't know what, you leaned on him for a second, asked him to hold your pencil for a second, that wouldn't be enough. Okay. Further says the Mishnah, Hagonev es beno, if one steals his, kidnaps his own son, Rabbi Yishmol beno Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka machayev. Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan Brocha, says you're on the hook still. No difference between your son and not your son. V'chacham pochen, the chacham say no. You wouldn't be liable for that. Because the pasuk says v'nimtza biyado, it's like he's discovered in your hand, that would come to exclude people who are already like regularly around in your presence and you know, they're with you already. Like for example, a child or a sibling or even a student. You know, if you have a student who's like a regular, you know, you're running like boarding school and the students are there with you. So then again, that child, kidnapping that child would not be liable to the death penalty. Finally, says the Mishnah, Ganav Misha Chetzio Ever Vechetzio Ben Chorin, the famous person who is a slave who had been born not Jewish. He now becomes a Jewish slave that makes him sort of like a quasi-Jew, obligated in mitzvahs, like a woman. And let's say this slave had two owners, and one owner emancipates the slave, meaning the slave is now sort of half free and therefore like a full-blown Jew, because he's already gone to the mikvah. So that's a back-ended way of becoming Jewish, like kind of like a quasi-gerus, sort of. But the other owner didn't free him, so he's half still enslaved and half a full-blown Jew. What if you kidnap that person? Is that considered to be the Jew for which you're liable for execution? So again, Rabbi Yehuda Machai, Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, it is. And the Chum say, no, it isn't. It has to be a full-blown Jew. The basis of Machlokas is a little technical, based on the drashas of Me'achiv and the Pasuk. Okay, it's very technical. I'm not sure I want to get into it so much. The point is that if Me'achiv is free to be darshan, when the Pasuk says, Ki matze ish gonav nefesh Me'achiv b'nei Mibnei Yisrael, is that Me'achiv, is that coming now to be what's called a mute, and exclude somebody, like a slave, or a slave anyway is considered to be your Achiv, because, I mean, is Achiv considered to be a slave also? Because you could say there's no such thing as Achva, like fraternity with slaves, or you could say, no, they're your brother, and it's as much as their Chayv and Mitzvahs, like any woman is. In any case, based on that, you end up having two or three mi'utim, which ends up leading to the consequence of whether or not you're coming to add something back, and leaving that detail alone, the bottom line is the halacha is like the chachamim, that you only have two, and there are two mi'utim, and therefore the half slave, half freed Jew does not meet the criteria. So if one would kidnap such a person, he would not be chayav misa.